Welcome to Fat Camp Show number 12, I think. For May 1st, 2016, Fatbike.com presents Fat Camp, a more or less monthly podcast covering different technical aspects of fat and plus bikes. Look for all our shows at fat-bike.com/radio or subscribe to our feed on iTunes. Today we're going to be talking about our trip to North Carolina and how our fat bikes with 29 plus wheels worked in Pisgah. We're also going to be talking about how plus bikes seem to be evolving in the bike industry, the explosion of plus forks and plus rims. Hope you enjoy. North Carolina. Welcome, Andy. How's my fellow camper been doing?
Oh, not too bad, Ken. Doing quite well, actually, right now in the spring of Michigan.
Excellent. Yeah, spring finally has sprung. We just went through a really cold week, which felt even colder after a trip down south, which I think we need to talk about some.
Ooh, yeah, that was a welcomed trip down to the Pisgah National Forest.
Yes. I'm finally, by the way, pronouncing it correctly after, I don't know, 3 weeks of incorrectly pronouncing it. But I guess a lot of times I don't necessarily want to end up blathering about what we've got going on because sometimes it's, you know, not all that exciting or whatever.
But we think it's exciting.
Oh, we think it's awesome. But, right, you know, right. We don't want to bore people with it.
Sure.
But in this case, I think it's applicable because we went down to Pisgah. We ended up riding down there. Both Andy and I were on hardtail 29 plus bikes with 100 mil front suspension, which, you know, anybody who's ridden down there knows that that is way too little a bike for what those trails are. Mm-hmm. And actually had a really good experience out of it, mostly because of the plus bike thing.
Yeah, loaded up the trucks and spent 6 days down there exclusively in Pisgah and took the hardtails, you know, for six days of riding down there.
It's what we had, you know, and, you know, had a great time. We were a group of six guys total, had a range of bikes down there. So it was kind of interesting, you know, riding with other people that had, for lack of a better way of putting it, more capable bikes for that kind of, you know, terrain and trail conditions. You know, one of the guys had a Scott full suspension bike, 130 mils of travel front and rear, you know, the dropper post and everything like that.
Dropper post, I forgot.
How can you forget about the dropper post? I'm in love with dropper posts at this point because I ended up getting a dropper post a little before going, and I am so damn glad that I did. I mean, that made a night and day difference.
Yeah, I wish I would have had one.
So, you know,
but we had that bike, and then we had another Scott.
Yep, that was a little bit shorter travel, a little bit full more suspension.
Yeah,
another full suspension bike, and then another guy on a hardtail.
Right.
So, you know, we kind of had a real mix of bikes for down there. And with the exception of the one guy with the 130 mils of travel front and rear, none of us really had the ideal. excuse me. The ideal bike for the terrain down there.
No, but what we discovered is that our plus bike setup worked really well.
It was amazingly capable.
Yeah.
Ideal, no. You know, and I guess, you know, let me kind of put the caveat on all this. I'm going to rave about how good the plus bike is here in a minute and how capable it was. And
Appropriate for the podcast, yeah.
Yeah, how much it ended up matching up. But by no means am I saying that a plus bike, you know, like a hardtail 29 plus bike is comparable to like 130 miles of rear travel.
Oh, no, I should have rented something when I was down there.
But I guess you're right. But long story short, you know, like the guy that was on the 130 mil travel bike, good bike handler. And I typically always would just follow him down the downhills. And I would sometimes get dropped, but most of the time I can hang pretty darn well with him, which, you know, for how chunky and gnarly, and for the people who have not ridden down there, you know, we're talking temperate rainforest with old school trails.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of trails that are very steep going up and down that have a lot of erosion issues, which exposes tons of roots and rocks. There's a lot of technical features.
Right. We stopped in at the Hub bike shop there and we're just trying to get some local knowledge. And it was mentioned that we had some guys on hardtails and she was like, oh, are they burly? And what we found out is that Ken is burly and I am not burly. But But yeah, I mean, with that travel, he did drop it, you know, once.
Yeah.
In a while.
Yeah. And you know, it's like, I mean, I'd come into the bottom of a couple mile downhill and I'd be a few seconds down on him,
sure.
Which, you know, it's totally fine. I survived. I was happy. But I guess what my point was is that, you know, it wasn't this night and day difference. If I hadn't had a dropper post and I hadn't had plus tires, I mean, there's no way I could have done what I did.
Yeah.
The plus setup was just amazingly versatile. And I guess, you know, and I don't want to get too far off a topic of talking about, you know, Pisgah, but, you know, this, I also have to point out that Andy and I, the bikes that we were riding, this is the same fat bike that we were riding all winter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had, you know, we both had 4.8 inch tires on there.
Yep.
We did all our powder riding with the same bike, you know, and we ended up going south. We, you know, threw suspension forks on, switched out to 29 plus wheels.
Adjusted the headset a little bit.
Yeah, and on yours you did? I didn't do it at all. I left all. Mine pretty okay. Slack. So, right. You know, like with my setup, I have slider dropouts on it. I had them totally slammed in. So I think my chain stays were about 17 inches, so fairly short. I had head tube angle set up at, it was somewhere right around 69 degrees.
I didn't know that you didn't spin yours around.
No, I kept it really slack because okay. I was like, okay, I know this is going to be some gnarly stuff. Right. And, you know, when you look at the numbers, I mean, I had, you know, like I said, 69 degree head angle, maybe about 68.5, like 12.5 inch bottom bracket height, and, you know, fairly short chain stays, which are like 17 inches.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically like, if you look at a burly hardtail, you know, type situation or whatever you want to call modern trail geometry, it's pretty darn close. It's a little bit steeper front end. It's maybe a little bit, you know, higher bottom bracket for a rigid rear end, and it's a slightly longer chain stay, but I mean,
you took your fat bike,
yeah,
switched out your wheels and you went to North Carolina.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, the reason why I'm kind of getting into some of those numbers is because, you know, there's been this big trend in the industry to, you know, sort of slacken out the front end. You know, it's like, you know, slacker, longer, lower, and then you have a tight rear end.
Right.
And basically, I had that with my fat bike. And I think, you know, you look at the geometry of most fat bikes that are being made right now, and it pretty much fits that.
Gotcha.
So, you know, I just, you know, kind of getting off on this tangent because there's a lot of people out there that have a fat bike that they love that it could be amazingly capable for riding, you know, a much, 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 much bigger variety of stuff.
Sure.
So,
I'm still stuck on the tight rear end that you just mentioned, but, even the tires that we put on were good.
Oh yeah. The Chupacabras blew me away.
Yeah.
Their durability was amazing. Right. You know, of the six riders we had out there, four
this.
Of which were on traditional 29ers, you know, and then two of us, Andy and I, were on 29 plus.
They
shit the bed.
Yeah, they did.
I mean, we had two guys that had tires fail, you know, with their 29, you know, and Andy and I had zero problems. We were both riding Chupacabras,
right,
which really impressed me because, you know, the Chupacabra, it's a fairly lightweight 29 plus,
mm-hmm.
You know, it's full sized. It's, you know, the knobs, like, you know, I was looking at other people's tires at the end of the week and there's like chunks missing off their knobs and they're like showing all these signs of wear. Chupacabras came through and like, yeah, okay, the knobs were all slightly more rounded on the edges,
sure.
But all in all, I mean, they held up incredibly well.
Yeah. They hooked me. I felt confident on them.
Yeah. And
just
you
as
know,
much as I do around here.
Yeah. And you know, our Midwest riding is not that treacherous for tires, so to go to a place where it's very realistic that you're going to slash sidewalls and stuff like that and have zilch for issues was really encouraging. And you know, and like I kind of said before, when I'm following this dude on this 130 mil travel bike, you know, I'm basically pinning it. I am not, you know picking my lines down in between the rocks and, you know, right. Taking it easy. I'm just blasting through stuff.
Yeah.
So I was really impressed that those tires held up as well as they did.
And the main reason that we headed down there was because a bunch of us around here have decided to peer pressure everybody into training for the local 100 miler. The NUE runs right through the town here with the Lumberjack 100. And so some of us went down for some early spring training to get some miles, to get some good miles in rather than junk miles and start this training. And so in doing that, we come back from Pisgah and we're raring to go in the Midwest. And it really kind of set the tone for, you know, what these next couple months are going to do. Yeah. And then at the same time, Sea Otter's happening. And
well, and I guess, and that's really where this conversation ties in about what we've been up to. Right. I mean, part of what is, you know, our experience is pertinent just because it kind of flushes out our perspective on this.
So many
plus
people
bike
give
stuff.
A rat's ass what we're up to, you know?
Right. Yeah. But we're seeing a big industry trend. We're going to talk more about this mm-hmm. in a little bit. But there's this big industry trend where it seemed like previously plus bikes were kind of pigeonholed as being this adventure thing. It was for bike packing and, you know, getting out there and having an adventure, but it wasn't really for any kind of like real gnar type stuff you might run into downhill. It wasn't for cross country racer boys. It was just kind of, you know, the people that might want to put bags on their bike and go on an adventure. So now we're starting to see some things come out where there's this real big trend where they're starting to look at these longer travel kind of trail enduro style bikes and teaming that up with the plus thing.
Yeah. And coming out with videos that even,
well, yeah, make you think kind of joke about it. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and what we're kind of referencing right now is, Rocky Mountain Bikes. They ended up releasing this video, Dumbing Down the Shore.
Yeah.
And we'll provide a link in the show notes. But that came out this week. And, you know, basically it's all about, you know, how, you know, somebody's, you know, making all our trails easier. They're dumbing them down. This is wrong.
Yeah.
And it all is just because he's riding this.
Everyone
this
else
plus
is like,
bike.
No, I think there's a lot of gnar still out there. Yeah. You know, it's like, no, they're making it easier. And ends up he's on a plus bike. So
yeah. And you know, it's nice to see this because at first when the plus bikes and the fat bikes came out, you know, kind of the hardcores in the industry were kind of disparaging and they're like, oh, you know, more skilled riders don't need that. I like the more technical nature. I mean, that's just for beginners and a whole bunch of other crap like that, which, you know, I would label myself as being a pretty darn good rider, technically. And as soon as I got on these, I'm like, holy crap, the envelope just got pushed out so far. And now I can do so much more. I can go so much faster. I can do all this crazy stuff. And that just doesn't apply to our kind of tame Midwest conditions. That applies to everything.
Right.
And so you put a plus bike under a really good rider and they're going to be able to end up doing even crazier stuff. You put it under a beginning rider and they're going to feel more confident and they're going to end up, you know, being able to do more crazy stuff than they would have been able to do. It just, you know, it kind of expands the envelope of what's possible. And that's not a bad thing.
Right.
You know, so it's really good to see the industry finally, instead of poo-pooing it, finally starting to embrace it and be like, hey, wait a minute, there's something going on with this.
And well, we can answer this question down the road during the discussion, but for the trail and enduro, is that going to transfer or has it already transferred over into the XC kind of world?
XC world has not been touched yet.
Okay.
My guess is it will.
Okay.
And, when it comes to the XC world, it is a lot more course dependent. But there's times like I guess I got to kind of talk about my own experience. And this gets back to, you know, our spring break plans and stuff like that.
Okay.
In addition to, for me, I ended up having a little extra time off. I got a chance to go ride down in Florida. I rode at San Felasco, which is kind of by Gainesville, and I also rode at Santos, which is a bronze-level IMBA ride center down by Ocala in mm-hmm. Florida. Santos is an amazing trail system. It's built around, there's a couple of old quarries, so you've got rock, you've got vertical, some really technical riding. The Ocala Mountain Bike Association has just been doing amazing work down there. They've been building all sorts of wooden features and stuff. I can't rave about the trail system enough. And then on top of that, then there's this huge network. I don't know what the total trail mileage is. It's in excess of 50 miles of trail. And it's part of this cross Florida Greenways corridor, whatever it is. And they've got sort of this area that's over by the quarries, but then they got another area where they're at one point in time, historically, they were going to build a canal across Florida.
Okay.
And they started working on it. So they like blasted this canal out and then they down the line decided not to do it. And this trail goes through where the canal was built.
Nice.
But then never actually done anything with it. So, nice. You know, once again, it's kind of like the quarries where you've got all this rock, you've got some vertical, you've got just this really great terrain to ride in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it, I didn't get a chance to ride that much down there this time because I didn't have much time, but about a year ago I was down there and I was in good shape, but I wasn't in like primo race shape or anything like that.
Okay.
And I'm going on these 3-4 hour rides and then, you know, I upload my, you know, ride to Strava and I'm like, what the hell? All of a sudden I've got all these top tens on all these segments. And I'm like, I'm not in that kind of shape. I mean, this is a popular ride area. I shouldn't be able to end up doing this. So I started going into looking at it because I'm just like scratching my head. I'm like, I am not good enough to be able to do this. Why, right. Why am I able to end up, you know, doing this well? And I started looking at, I'm blanking on the name of the service, but it's tied in with Strava. It's race something or other. And what it does is it allows...
Digital doping is what you were doing.
No, I was not doing that. What it allows you to do is track, like as you're going along the segment, where you and the person with the KOM were in reference to each other.
Oh, wow.
So you can see what, you know, like how far behind you were, how far ahead you were in different spots, and you can see what the elevation was and stuff like that. And when I started going through this, I noticed that any place that there was corners, there was downhills, there was anything like this, me on the plus bike, I was just slaying. I was like 2, 3, 4, 5 miles an hour quicker than these people on these skinny tired bikes were.
Yeah.
And then I would lose a little bit of time elsewhere. But overall, it had me so I was like incredibly competitive on a lot of these segments. Mm-hmm. And they weren't just all downhills. I mean, there was, you know, some more traditional cross country stuff, some technical stuff. It really, it ranged. So I guess this is a long way of saying it, but
no.
that was an experience where I was like, I kind of went from thinking, okay, you know, our Midwest, our sandy trail conditions, things like that, you know, the plus bike is great for that. I'm a firm believer that there's a lot of courses, especially in northern Michigan, where the plus bike is faster than a traditional mountain bike, you know, right. For like a cross country racer. But I thought that was kind of isolated here, and that kind of, you know, opened my eyes and like, hey, wait a minute. This isn't just sandy stuff. This has got some rockier stuff. It's got some bumpier stuff. It's a place where I could see full suspension being really advantageous. But the plus bike was really, really helpful.
That was a... Now I gotcha. That was... It took a long time to get to that point.
Well,
it's
just...
it makes sense, though.
Yeah, it was one of those things where I just... When I first looked at the numbers, I'm like, what the hell? And then I'm like, oh, this, the only thing it can be is the plus bike. So
XC...
So I guess what I'm getting to is I think there's going to be a lot of experimentation that goes on, and I think you're going to find some racer boys that are like, ooh, wait a minute. This setup is fast as hell on these course conditions. And you're going to see some guys start to latch on to the plus bike thing in the cross country world and really rip it up.
This summer?
I will probably start to see a few of people doing that. Yeah.
I'd like to see the heads of state give it a shot. You know, regional racers.
Well, and I think we will. And okay. You know, it's like if you look, once again, kind of you look at our top racers, you know, Jordan Wakely.
Yeah.
You know, he's a big thing in the Midwest.
Right.
And he's been riding 29 plus for the last year.
Right.
Actually, I guess kind of the last 2 years, because he was on Borealis
sure.
2 years ago, and I think he had a plus set up on there. But he's been riding, you know, acquiring cycles and 29 plus last year and was riding really well. But you can kind of write him off because, I mean, he's kind of this freak of nature. You know, he's just like this super, 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 super strong rider. Mm-hmm. You know, and he could ride fast on anything.
Right. We've mentioned that before. You give him a Huffy and he'll crush you.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's kind of hard to, you know, that's not like your apples to apples kind of comparison. You know, you just look at the guy and he's like fast as hell and he's going to be fast as hell on anything. So, okay, he's on a plus bike, you know. But, you know, I can kind of tell from myself switching back and forth, it makes a significant difference. Uh-huh. And there are certain places where it's going to be smoking fast.
But don't you think that, well, do you think that we'll start seeing, you know, Ortis Shore or Shequamigan or even heading out west to Matahe and that kind of stuff, that a plus bike, to me, makes sense?
Yeah, I think we're going to see, like, I think we're going to see some plus bikes.
Maybe for the shorter things, you know, maybe for the little Iceman sprint that they do in November, maybe you don't want a plus bike, but certainly for the longer ones, you know?
Well, We're kind of getting a little off topic here,
yeah,
but when it comes to the plus bike thing, as far as my experience with cross country stuff, if we're where the weight is not a disadvantage. Because, I mean, it's a gimme. Your wheel set's going to weigh more when you're riding a plus setup.
Hardly or barely, you mean?
Well, the thing is, I mean, you're looking at an 800-gram tire versus a 500-some-gram tire. You know, so, I mean, you're going to give up at least a pound in rotating weight.
Okay, all right.
You know, and that's a gimme. And that... Every time you got to accelerate that, you know, like when you're in a pack situation and, you know, somebody accelerates and you got to close the gap.
Yeah.
It adds up.
Yep.
Okay. So you know, that is where the plus bike sucks. And that's where it really doesn't work for the cross country thing. Same thing with, if you're on like hard pack trails where it's really fast, you get going above 20 miles an hour and, you know, I don't mean to be a weenie, but the aerodynamic drag makes a big difference. you know, There's a significant difference between, like, when I'm, you know, out front on a 29 plus versus a 29er versus sitting in the wheels.
Okay.
So that's another thing. But on a course where you don't have to brake and slow down and speed up and slow down and speed up, you know, you can just stay on it.
Yeah.
29 plus is amazing. Okay. And what happens is, since you can rail through corners so much faster, you have so much more corner traction, you don't have to slow down as much for the corners. So you don't get that slow down, speed up, slow down, speed up. So it really is going to depend on your course. Mm-hmm. If you're in a pack situation and you're just trying to hang in, you know, further back,
yeah,
and you're getting yo-yoed, 29 plus probably isn't going to be that great. But if you're able to get out front, you're able to open it up, you're going to have a gap on the guy behind you every single bloody corner if you're actually taking that 29 plus or whatever plus bike right up to the limit.
Gotcha.
So, and then all of a sudden, what's happened is they're having to sprint to catch up, whereas you had a steady state effort. And so it really depends situation on what you're at.
Course specific.
It's course specific. It's, you know, kind of where you're at. Pack wise specific, there's a lot that goes into it. So, you know, I think it's going to take a little while longer for people to kind of crack that nut and figure out when the plus bike is appropriate and when it's not. And I think what's going to happen is we're going to see a big spectrum of tires that come out. We're actually already starting to see that. Cause a lot of the sort of the downhill people, like if you look at, the press materials for like the Ibis Mojo that came out or, the Santa Cruz Hightower,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, both of those bikes, they were like, you know, the 2.8-inch plus tire is kind of what we felt was ideal. Mm-hmm. You get to the 3-inch, it gets a little too bouncy, blah, 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 blah. You know, I think there's going to be that settling in where people are like, okay, you know, maybe we don't want to go all the way to 3. Maybe we want to end up going 2.8. Maybe we want to go 2.6. You know, there's going to be kind of the settling out of size. And people are going to kind of figure out, oh, okay, this is when it makes sense to go bigger. This is when it makes sense to go smaller.
And don't forget, fat bikers, you can switch over to plus bike so damn well, easily.
Well, and I guess kind of to throw it in there, there's going to be a time where bigger than 3 inches is faster.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, it really kind of just, it's going to depend on what your conditions are.
So that's our intro.
Jesus, yeah. So, I guess, you know, the kind of leading into where we're going with this, the rest of the show, and I'm sorry that we didn't really talk about what the show is going to end up being about.
By the way, this is what the show's about.
Yeah. What's happened in the last month or so is that we've had all sorts of components start to come out in the plus world.
Proliferation.
Yeah. And so we're going to get into, there's just a ton of fork options that have become available now, which are really exciting. So we're going to kind of give you the lowdown on that and kind of talk a little bit about where the industry trends are and where things are kind of pointing. Because there's sometimes in the industry where like a tire will come out and it'll be like, oh, okay. The only reason why this tire comes out is because this is category defining and there's going to be a bike that's made for this. Oh. Same thing happens with forks. There's sometimes like a fork will come out and you're like, whoa, okay, some big manufacturer's got a bike coming that is going to have this fork on it. I mean, it was a little bit the opposite with the Bluto because, you know, everybody in the industry knew the Bluto was coming out, didn't talk about it, and then all of a sudden it's like Bluto came out and bam, there's a million, you know, front suspension fat bikes that are available.
Okay.
This is a case where we've had some forks that have come out ahead of bike releases that are really telling about what direction this plus stuff is going. So we got that. We've also got to talk about rims because there's just a ton
Do we ever not talk about rims?
how can you, I mean, rims plus bikes, it's yeah, all one of the same, but there's there's a ton of really good, affordable, plus rims that have become available. So, you know, if you've been on the fence about building up your fat bike or getting a plus bike or whatever, this is a really good time. So
yeah, scroll down, show your wife these show notes, and it's totally affordable to get a new set of hoops for your fat bike and turn it into a plus bike. But that's what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that, and then we're going to probably finish out, assuming that we don't blather too long. Talking about some stuff that kind of gets us excited that it's come out in sort of the plus and fat bike world. So thank you for hanging on through that impossibly long.
Enjoy this little musical ditty while we pee. I'm a sinner, and that I'm never gonna be no breadwinner. I ain't saying that I'm a saint, all I'm saying that they like her face. Yesterday I loved to play, but today I like to set this record straight. Well, sometimes you gotta take a chance. So Carolina, may I have this dance? Oh, Carolina.
Welcome back, campers.
Welcome back. Here we are. We just realized that we were 25 minutes into this before we took a break, so
yeah,
this
sorry.
Is a long car ride, I think.
Yeah. So, okay, let's talk forks.
All right, forks.
Now, before we get into this.
Forks aplenty.
Yes, forks aplenty. I think that will be the title of the show. one thing that really sucks is that we still don't have hardly any fat bike fork options.
No.
So, you know, all this pretty much is plus bike stuff. There's going to be one fork that we talk a bit about that will fit a 4-inch, you know, 26x4-inch tire on there. Other than that, I mean, but you're not going to be able to use your normal 135 or 150 fat bike hub on that.
Nope.
So we'll get into that. So, you know, I apologize, you know, you fat bikers out there, this kind of sucks for you, but if you're going to end up building a new wheel set anyways,
right.
For your plus bike,
it
you know, for your plus
thing
wheel
that you
set.
Waited till now.
Yeah. So, okay. So what's out there? We're going to provide a nice little chart to try to do my bestest on summarizing, what is available right now, because
this chart is tits, man.
There's been a lot of stuff released. So, let's start with some of the most applicable stuff.
All right.
RockShox Reba. They've offered their boost fork. They say that it's, 27.5 plus or 29 compatible, fits 29 plus, no problem.
Yep.
So, that's a really solid fork.
Yeah.
You know, you've got,
it's a well-known fork. Everyone knows it.
Yeah. It's good price. You know, it's very approachable for most people. It comes in, you know, 80, 100 and 120 mil travel.
Yep.
You know, it's got 51 mils of offset. So that's a pretty standard thing now for, you know, the size wheel and everything. It's just, it's a really solid, affordable option.
Household name.
Yeah. You can get that with a remote lockout if you want to end up going that route. They have it in a couple different flavors as far as the technology in it. It's a super solid fork.
Right on.
So if you're a little more racer boyish, they also are now offering a SID that's also another boost fork. They listed as 27.5 plus. 29 fork, but if it's 29 plus too.
Do you think that the SID is going to be a little bit more flexy than the Reba?
I don't think so. I think the forks are almost identical.
That's what I'm looking.
Even the
stanchions are the same.
Yeah,
diameter.
Exactly. The stanchions the same diameter. I think the lowers might even be the same casting. I don't know. I could be wrong about that.
Well, then WTF but on those. Then.
I think what's going on is that they may end up putting in a lighter crown. I'm not positive on that. And I think what they're going to do is make it so that it's got some different internals, so you can use like the hydraulic lockout and some stuff like that.
All right.
So basically, essentially, I think it's going to end up being some cheechier stuff.
All right.
But right now, the details are pretty thin on that. That I don't think is available quite yet. I've been trying to dig up and find information, but I haven't found a whole lot.
All right.
You know, as far as price goes, the Reba, that's going to end up being somewhere around, you know, $540 to $690. The SID is going to end up being, you know, like $760 to $900,
when you have these asterisks that, you know, they're not official, but it fits and has reasonable clearance. Why don't they make it official then?
I'll be honest. I don't know. It's one of those things where I don't know if it's like they've got certain minimums as far as what their clearance is supposed to be.
Okay.
But like when I say this,
when
I say this is going to fit, I mean, you've got like 3/8 inch, space between the tire and the brace or whatever. So you've got a fair amount of clearance everywhere. It's not like it's really getting skimped.
Right.
So, I really don't know why RockShox isn't talking more about like the 29 plus stuff, but I couldn't find any instance of that for the Reba and the Cid, but I know it fits. I've seen it. It's no problem.
Gotcha. Okay.
The RockShox RS1, that's nothing new. That's been out there for a long time.
Yeah, but goddamn, you got to finance that thing.
It's a gazillion dollars. You got to get a special hub that's their quote unquote predictive steering hub. It's got these big surfaces.
All right, skip
blah,
that.
Blah, blah,
jeez, OP.
Neat fork, but okay.
Oh, and now here's the big one.
Yeah, this is the one that really gets me excited because this the RockShox Pike, because not only are they making this kind of like the Reba where there's this 27 plus and a 29 fork, they're also making a dedicated 29 plus
specific
fork. Now, kind of like what I talked about before, how there seems to be this trend in the industry where these plus bikes are going towards this more trail type stuff and enduro stuff where you're looking at bikes that have got at least 120 mil of travel in the rear and up to 150 plus in the front.
Holy shit.
Okay, that's where this Pike fits. And I'll be honest, I haven't seen a single 29 plus by any major manufacturer that fits the bill on this. So I gotta believe very soon we're gonna be getting some sort of announcement from and I don't know have anything the basis off of, but somebody like Trek, who is a big proponent of 29 plus. We're going to see some big manufacturer drop a really nice, burly 29 plus bike.
Some enduro boner Pisgah starts a P bike.
Yeah. I mean, the Pike is really, really, really well renowned in the industry for being just a kick butt trail / enduro fork.
You possibly heard it first here at Fat Camp.
So, the fact that they released this fork is gargantuan.
Yeah, Pike is as popular with a different style of riding as Reba is with a different style of riding.
Yeah. Yeah, they're totally different segments.
Right.
So, the fact that this is out there is, they're not going to offer this if all they're going to end up being are like 29 plus hardtails. Like, this would be probably a good fork that you could get pretty darn rowdy on a stash.
Yeah.
But they're not going to make this fork for the stash.
Yeah.
So something cool is going to come out really soon.
I'm excited to hear some other podcaster talk about this too.
Yeah. And, kind of to get into, personally what I'm into right now. So I'm a bike whore.
Because it's all about you.
Yeah. I'm already like thinking about next bike because I've been really enjoying traveling and I've been going to some places where I want full suspension. So, to me, this is like, my dream come true because I was looking for a bike where I would be able to have probably 120 mils of travel in the rear, like maybe 120, 130 up front, 29 plus. And this is exactly the fork I wanted.
You would have never, ever talked about more than 100 5 years ago.
No, I probably wouldn't have.
No, but, you would have been like,
well, but the thing is, you start to ride some of these different places.
Sure.
You're like, wait a minute, this would be so much more fun.
No wonder these guys have been talking about travel for years.
Exactly.
They haven't been in the land of the hand.
Yeah. So, that was a fork that just jumped out at me and it was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
The world just changed. Hats off to RockShox for doing this.
No, and as a side note, he sent me an email. I was like, hey, you might want to check this out. So,
yeah.
I was like, oh, okay. So,
now, kind of going along with this, and this just kind of adds even more evidence, credence, whatever, to my little theory on like big bike manufacturer offering some really kick butt, burly 29 plus bike.
First at Fat Camp, yeah.
Yeah, RockShox Yari. That's basically the cheap version of the Pike. So once
I've never heard of it before.
It's kind of your budget version. It's basically just like the Pike. It's got 35 mil stactions.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a very stiff fork. And, if you look at the Pike, the range of travel options go from 120 mils up to 160 mils. And The Yari actually goes from 120 up to 180.
Oh, it does?
Yeah.
But, oh, yeah, okay.
You know, but the Yari is very price conscious. It's like a $650 fork.
So, weight? Is that going to be the difference, you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to be as sophisticated a suspension. They're not going to end up, you know, taking every single ounce off of the thing.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to cut some corners on that, but you're going to get on a solid fork that's going to work really well. It's probably going to hold up really well, and... You know, it's going to fit a 29 plus wheel.
I wish they would have called it the Yanni and had like a really cheesy mustache on the crown.
That would have been awesome.
That would have been rocking, man.
So that's another, this category defining fork that I was really stoked to see.
Yeah.
A sleeper fork that kind of got released is this Fox 34. They offer a Boost 27 and a half plus fork. Supposed to work for 27 and a half plus and 29.
Right.
But come to find out, this thing has oodles and oodles of clearance.
This is different than the Fox 34 last year?
I think it's the same fork.
Okay.
But I think you might have, like when you ended up riding that Jameis, yeah, the Dragon Slayer,
yeah.
I could be 100% wrong, but I don't think that fork had nearly the clearance that the one that's been released now has.
I certainly didn't test it out.
No, and I think what you were riding was like the 29 version or the 27 and a half version or something.
Half, okay.
Yeah, it's just because this new one that's, you know, 27 and a half plus slash 29, it'll fit a 29 plus.
Okay.
But it'll also, and this is for you fat bikers out there, it will also fit a 26 by 4-inch tire with ample clearance on a 65 mil rim. Now, it looks like it's got so much clearance that it would probably end up fitting fine on an 80 mil rim too. But okay. if you're going to be riding this is a sort of a summer fork type scenario.
Right, right.
You know, you're probably going to want the 65 mil rim because that's going to be a better riding on dirt. But that is a really rad fork. It comes in either 120 or 140 mils of travel. I think it's adjustable from 110 up to 150 mils.
Adjustable, like you could change it out on your own?
Yeah, I'll be honest. Like I'm not as familiar with the Fox Forks as I am with the RockShox, so okay. I don't necessarily know what the mechanism is.
You don't know, Jack.
Yeah, but from what I understand, I think it is adjustable within that range.
But when you say, hey, fat bikers, because my ears perk up, I'm still... My Bluto. What? Listen to me. my Bluto is still the only thing that's going to get... The only fork that's going to let me get really fat.
Yeah, that's the only one that's going to fit a 4.8.
Okay. But a summer fat bike suspension, 26
exactly.
by 4. Gotcha.
Yeah,
because right, gotcha.
in kind
what
of...
you just said, but I was... I don't want to say retarded, but...
But no, it's like... And this is something that we're going to talk about a little bit later, but something that kind of gets me fired up is that Sea Otter stuff just got released.
Yeah.
And there's the Farley EX, which is a 120 mil rear travel full suspension bike. And, you know, they're putting a Bluto on the front, but... Arguably, if you wanted a little bit better performing fork, because the Fox 34, it's got bigger diameter stactions, so it's going to be stiffer. You know, and that's the knock on the Bluto, is it's kind of a wimpy fork.
Okay.
I know, and I'm getting a little off track, but it's like,
really?
I personally, unless I was going for like a weight weenie, like cross country setup, I would not ride, me personally, a 32 mil fork ever again. And the reason for that is because... Like, I had, you know, a Sid XX
yeah.
with, you know, 15 mil through axle. And if I put...
I own that fork now.
My
wife's bike.
Yes, yes. But what happened is, because of my riding style, I mean, I'm a bigger dude.
Yeah.
I ride really hard.
Yeah.
You know, if I ran a 2.3-inch tire on that thing, I could get it to rub on the crown. And I, you know, like just sitting there when you're looking at it,
oh, wow.
I had like a quarter to 3/8-inch, you know, space all the way around. But it's just the fork would flex so much that the tire would rub on the crown.
Yeah.
And that scared the crap out of me.
Can't have that.
And you know, it's like, and it affects the handling and, you know, a lot of other stuff. It's like, it's just, it was too wimpy for my style. And there's a lot of other people who are hitting a way bigger stuff. And then, you know, that was a 100 mil fork. That was not 120 even.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if you're using the full 120 mil and you're
right,
riding
right,
really
right.
hard,
right.
you know, a 32 millimeter stanchion fork is going to be kind of flexy.
Yeah. And my present wife will never, ever, ever approach that at all.
So, you know, this Fox 34, is a like you're looking for a pretty good front suspension summer fat bike setup. That is that's a very interesting thing to look at.
Okay.
So there's that. You know, the Manitou Magnum, that's another fork. It's been out for a while.
Never talked about it here.
Oh, no. Yeah, I think we talked about it a little bit because, yes, I mean, it came on the stash and some stuff like that. That's another 34 mil staction fork.
Okay,
I mean,
stop. I just looked it up. The word for an upright bar, post, or frame forming a support or barrier is pronounced stanchion.
Oh, I'm sorry. But see,
staction.
I always screw up pronunciation left and right.
I've noticed that about you. It's a stanchion.
That's the reason why I couldn't say Pisgah for like a month or whatever.
God damn.
Yeah, I just get it in my head. So, okay.
So this is a 34 millimeter stanchion.
Yes, thank you. Diameter. And I'm probably going to say it wrong the rest of it. And then at some point in time, I will get it right.
Because it's been driving all four people listening. Dave McLean is like, God damn it, it's stanchion, not staction.
Yeah.
All right, so Manitou, the Magnum. And now they're making a dedicated 29 plus fork as well.
Yeah, yep. So, you know, that's all good. You know, that's another really solid option.
And we've got a lot of, we got more travel too. We go up to 120, 140.
Yeah. Yep. So, nice. Some real good travel options there.
Good.
Now, the only other forks that are really kind of out there, they've been out there for a while, and they're kind of the small niche things. There's two MRP forks. There's the Stoke and there's the Stage.
I wish they would have called it the Stroke.
So the Stage is a fork that you're going to find on their website. Mm-hmm. It's 34 mil. I'm already like second guessing myself on how to say it. Stanchion. Thank you. Yeah. Stanchion fork. It's really kind of competitive with the Pike. That's typically how it's used. And that comes in longer travel options. It goes from 120 up to 150 millimeters. Mm-hmm. And that fork is this pair of MRP forks are the only forks on this list that I'm talking about that are not boost forks.
Oh,
100
right.
mil forks.
Right.
And they just fit, you know, a 29 plus wheel.
That's what you have on the
I have got the Stoke. So what they do, the difference between the Stoke and the Stage, and you won't find the Stoke on the MRP website because that is kind of a custom item.
Okay.
It's the Stage fork because it's still got the 34 mil stanchion.
Stanchions, yeah.
Yes.
He's getting good.
Stanchion tubes. It's still got the same lowers as the Stage.
Yeah.
So you get all the stiffness and all the strength and everything like that. But what they do is they change the internals to just use either 80 or 100 mils of travel.
Okay.
And when I got that fork, I didn't want 120 mils because it was going to jack the front of my bike up so
this
far.
This is back in the day.
Yeah, it was all last year and stuff, man. It's like, geez, so old school. So I ended up getting the Stoke. And this to kind of give you an idea, they rate this one as their tandem fork.
Oh.
So, I mean, it's a burly fork.
Yeah.
But it's fairly lightweight. I've thoroughly enjoyed mine.
Okay.
If I had a choice between, let's say, like a Reba and this, I would take the MRP Stoke in a heartbeat. It happened to work out really nicely because with the 100 mil front hub, I had a wheel I could end up using on there.
Okay.
So there's a lot of benefits to these MRP forks for some people out there. And you might have a wheel set that will already fit on there.
Yeah.
Some stuff like that. So it's an interesting option, and it is a quality fork.
And MRP was?
White Brothers.
White Brothers, okay.
Yep. So, you know, they've got a long history.
Sure.
Made in the USA. Gunnison, Colorado, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
Not Gunnison. The Grand Junction, I'm sorry. You know, really, I've had great customer service with them. There was a lot of reasons why I ended up going with them. It was based off of my experience with White Brothers and things
White
like that.
White Brothers was awesome.
Yeah. So, it's definitely a niche fork, but it's a really good option.
And last but not least.
And then there's the Wren. And this is
who has been talking about the Wren?
That's a good question.
Was it Mike C?
I think he might have one or might have like
Walt?
Chimed in on it. There's a few of those guys that have.
Okay.
Because
here we go.
As far as I know, and I've only kind of peripherally followed this, but okay, the Wren's an upside down fork, and it was the fork that goes by many names. I think that was typically how it was referred to online for a long time. Because there's a lot of different people that are slapping their name on this upside down fork. And then quite frankly, it was a pretty mediocre fork at best. But then Ren ended up coming in and they have done a lot of improvements to the internals and done a lot of things like that. And supposedly the fork's a whole lot better. It's a actual fat bike fork. It's designed for 150, hub.
Yay.
It can go from anywhere from 70 up to 150 mils of travel. I think there's different versions.
Holy shit.
Yeah. It's got, your traditional 15 millimeter axle. You don't need a funky hub like, the upside down fork we talked about earlier, the RS1.
Right.
And there's some people that are saying it's a really good fork.
Yeah.
I don't really know anything. I've seen them. It's a very burly looking fork. It's an upside down fork, but like the stanchion.
Yes.
Stanchion tubes are 36 millimeters.
Beef.
Yeah. It seems like it could be a really, really good option.
It reminds me of the son of Han Solo. But I like that it's a fat bike fork too.
Yeah. At least there's some other option, right. But,
and it's 150. Cause if you've got 150 hubs, you're either Bluto or you're the son of Han Solo.
Yeah, otherwise you're riding rigid. I mean, you got nothing.
Right.
So that's kind of the lowdown on forks. And I guess, I know we raved about it, but really the biggie in here, like the game changer in here are...
Let me guess. The Pike.
Yeah, the Pike 29 Plus. Right.
Yep.
And the Fox 34. Both of those, I mean, to have both, RockShox and Fox come out with super solid plus offerings that will fit... both 27 plus and 29 plus is huge.
Yeah. Big companies like that don't just jump into a new thing without making sure that it's worth their while.
Yeah. And that there's some, it's real legitimacy to this.
Right on. Yeah.
So, okay. Got through that segment.
All right.
Now we're going to end up taking a little break.
Wait till you hear this little music interlude that he's got for you. And we'll be right back.
Yeah, we'll be to Rims. Welcome back, campers. We are on to the rim segment.
This is the rim job part.
So, to provide some context, why is this important? So we saw a lot of first movers kind of come out with rims. I mean, obviously Surly deserves a mention with their Rabbit Hole.
Sure.
We wouldn't really have a lot of this plus stuff if it weren't for Surly.
Yep.
So, it's like that came out. We ended up having the Sun Ringle Mule Fit. That was another rim that came out real early. The Velocity Dually was another one that came out.
Sure, yeah.
So we kind of had this first generation of these plus rims that came out. And we didn't get a whole lot else after that. There was a few options, like the WTB Scraper came out. But that was a little bit after the fact. That was about it. And almost all these aluminum rims... I'm not trying to be disparaging towards them. I mean, I'm really glad they came out.
Were they made of turkey lead?
Yeah, they were heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the case of the Rabbit Hole, didn't go tubeless particularly easily. I mean, you could go ghetto tubeless and you could do this and
dually,
do that.
Same thing.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of the dualies. I had some bad tubeless issues with those. We kind of had this first gen of plus aluminum rims. And I know 2 years ago, like when I first started riding a plus bike, I looked at them and I'm like, there's no way in hell I'm going to ride these things. These things are just boat anchors. I got to find a lighter option. So that's when I started looking at Chinese carbon and
gotcha.
I was able to then, and that was the only option. I wanted to go with a more established carbon option because Chinese carbon scared me at that time. But then, I'm like, shit, this is the only place I can get, a decent weight rim. That's a decent width to ride plus. Yep. So I kind of, crossed my fingers and went that option. I've been really happy since.
A dozen other guys have too.
Yeah. And then, a lot of people have jumped in with that because what happened was that was the only option. And it's like, even just a show or two ago, you and I were talking, I was like carbon, 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 right. Tubeless, tubeless, tubeless,
Sure.
Because there was this big gulf. You know, there was sort of the first mover rims that were kind of boat anchors, fairly expensive in a lot of cases.
Right.
And then you jumped straight to, you know, carbon rim options. And there really was nothing in between.
Yeah.
We're kind of at, like, I don't know, the second wave of plus rims or whatever you want, kind of want to call it. Because just recently, there's a ton of rims that are really awesome, that are affordable aluminum rims that kind of have slotted in between those first mover rims and the carbon world.
This table that you've put together, and just scroll down and you'll see it, but is amazing.
'Cause
like I could spend like an hour looking at this thing, because the first thing I'm floored by before you get into it is I can get cheap and light.
Yeah. Yeah. And this is why I wanted to spend time talking about it. Well, I'll be perfectly honest. I'm going to stop you there because, okay, you know,
if you build it for me,
I don't have any firsthand experience with these new rims.
Okay.
I don't
disclaimer
know anybody who's riding them already or anything else right. like that. This is just one of those things where, I got some requests to build wheels and, I was like, okay, you know, we could do this. And, you know, like the carbon was too pricey.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, you know, I know we could do this, but you really don't want to go with the aluminum first gen, you know, plus rims. And like, let me see what else is out there. And, you know, after Interbike, where a lot of the stuff kind of gets talked about and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
you know, it just kind of, it goes off into the vacuum and you don't know when it's really going to be available.
Right.
So I started to look at what was available and I was like, holy crap. There are so many good aluminum rims that didn't even get press coverage at Interbike that are now available.
You're being so good with your language tonight.
I'm trying not to be a potty mouth tonight.
That's really good.
So let's just
fire through these things. Yeah. Man.
So, okay. Probably the rim that I'm most excited about is WTB has brought on another rim that I don't know how they just like pronounce it or what, but it's like ASIM, but it's like, if they say it's a plan asymmetric and this is an asymmetric rim.
Okay.
It's whoop. Yeah. So what happens is when you look at the rim, the spoke holes are not drilled in the center of it.
Okay.
They're off to one side.
Okay. Why would you want to do that?
That's a good thing because what happens is, for your typical, this doesn't happen as much with fat bikes, but with your typical, like boost or your regular, you know, like 142, 135 type hub spacing, your rear wheel is very far from being symmetric. You know, that where your cassette is, that's very far inboard.
Sure.
So that flange of the hub is way further in than the other side where the disc is. So when you've got an asymmetric rim, you're kind of limited. You can only build the wheel as strong as the flange that's kind of closest to the center, like, because that'll have very high tension, and then the other side, which is further out, will have very low tension. And you know, that difference in the tension means you've got a weaker wheel than you want to have. You want to have a symmetric wheel.
Oh, why make a symmetric wheel if an asymmetric wheel is stronger?
No, okay, so you want a symmetric rim, or excuse me, a symmetric wheel, but by having an asymmetric rim, what you can do is you can move things over a little bit so that now you can put it so that where those spoke holes, that lines up, you know, in the center of your, where your hub flanges are. So you can have that symmetric wheel and you can have a stronger wheel.
Okay. So why make a symmetric rim then?
There's
easier to build.
Yeah. The asymmetric rims look funny.
Well, like 2002, I think I had a Mustang that was asymmetric, you know?
Yeah.
Ceramic
walls,
you know?
And you had that thing forever because it was a baller rim. Yeah, I mean, it held up well.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah, okay. And it's like, and this is something that, you know, we've seen come up now and then for a long time in the industry, but for whatever reason, not everybody does this.
Okay.
And, you know, this makes a heck of a lot of sense because, you know, on the rear, the cassette side is much more inboard than the disc side. On the front wheel, you've got a disc side, which is way more inboard than the other side. So you need an asymmetric rim front and rear typically.
Okay.
Now, the one exception to this can be if you're building a wheel for your fat bike where you've got, you know, already these monster wide hubs. But the thing is, when you've got a monster wide hub, it doesn't really make that big a difference. It's not going to make a big difference one way or the other. So the asymmetry isn't necessarily a bad thing. It isn't necessarily a good thing. It's just neutral. So there's some situations where this asymmetric rim is a huge advantage, mm-hmm. you know, with narrower hubs. And then when you get wider hubs, it doesn't make as big a difference. So it's just fine.
But I'm looking at the weight.
Well, but okay. That's the thing
that's
so cool.
That's what floors me is that the weight isn't, it's everything's in the right. All the weights are in the right ballpark, and the price is just not for WTB.
Well, and I guess, you know, the first thing is this is the cheapest plus bike option, and it's one of the best because it's asymmetric, and the weights are really good. They're not the lightest out there.
No.
But they're pretty darn good. It comes in two different widths. They've got a 29-millimeter internal width, and they've got a 35-millimeter internal width. Now, before people jump down our throats about, oh, those are not plus size. They are. You and I are both riding, you know, rims right now that have a 30-millimeter internal width with a 3-inch tire. And there's a lot of other guys. I mean, I feel like I got a man crush on him or something. But like Mike Kuryak, I bring him up a lot of times in these because, you know, he's a very respected person, has a lot of experience. And you know, even people like him, and you know, he's the guy behind, you know, Lace My 29.
Yeah.
You know, he's got a ton of experience both building wheels, riding stuff. And you know, even he's like, hey, I really don't feel like a 50-millimeter internal width or a 45-millimeter internal width is necessarily advantageous or even possibly the ideal size for a plus bike tire.
I guess I kind of understand people thinking that, but you've got experts that are saying that you're wrong.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe tire design will change or something's going to change. Maybe I'll change my opinion down the line. But I know I've spent a ton of time now on these Bond Tractor Line Plus wheels.
Yeah.
And I don't remember exactly what it is, but I want to say they're around 40 mil internal. Mm-hmm. And then I spent 2 years now on these 30 mil internal width wheels.
Right.
And I don't notice a single bit of difference between the two.
Okay.
You know, as far as like on, you know, well, what I do notice is the Bond Trackers are way heavier because they're lighter.
Yeah.
There's more material there. But that's it. And I guess, you know, that's, especially when we're talking aluminum rims, you know, if you're worried about performance and things like that, the weight is going to make a bigger difference, in my opinion, than the internal width is. I mean, I think you want to probably have it be 30 mil or bigger if you've got a 3-inch tire. However, you know, if you can save 50 to 100 grams a rim, you're going to notice that way more than you're going to notice 5 millimeters of internal rim width.
Oh, I see.
So, so
$81.
Yeah. Oh, exactly.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, it's, you know, then that's the 29er plus option.
Yeah.
You know, the suggested retail price on the 27.5 is like 77.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a really cheap rim. And, you know, WTB's got a good reputation. I really like building their rims. So I'm exceedingly stoked about those.
Usually I think WTB is like heavy.
Right. Yeah. And these aren't. They, yeah. You know, and the thing right. is, WTB had offered up. These rims are part of their like I series. I don't know what else to call it, but they'd offered up several rims in recent years where it's like they started listing it as like I want to like it was like I-25 or something like that. And what I think it was I-23 and I-25. And then what that is, that's the internal width measurement.
Okay.
And I started building up wheels for people with using those rims instead of stands because tubeless was just as reliable. They ended up being a little bit lighter and they were a heck of a lot cheaper. Mm-hmm. So it was a really good alternative. So, I mean, I've had a good experience with those. You know, I've had good experience with the scraper rims. So, you know, this is kind of in between and I would think that these are going to be some really well designed rims.
You're right.
So that's probably one of the rims I'm most excited about on this list.
Yeah. Check out the table. Let's go. What do you know about Easton's?
Well, not a whole lot. This is, once again, this is even a brand less. New rim.
Yeah.
I've read a few reviews. Everything's been really positive.
Okay.
What's interesting is they offer them in three widths. Mm-hmm. I think earlier in the show, I think we were talking about this. It might have been in our kind of our pregame where we were talking about stuff. But you know, this plus stuff, people don't really know what works yet. I mean, for a lack of a better term, there's very few people out there that have a couple years experience on this stuff. So, you know, like when I look at those WTB rims that we were just talking about, I think those were probably kind of are going to be marketed towards like the enduro crowd or, you know, people like that, that want to get a wider rim that's fairly cheap and then run it with a regular 20, or a regular like 2.4 inch tire or whatever. And I think the same thing goes for these Easton Arcs. I think they're offering up these wider rims and like the 35 mil version, they're kind of pushing more towards like your enduro crowd or whatever, somebody who's going to run a 2.4 inch tire.
Okay.
But really, these are awesome tires for the plus bike market. And, you know,
rims,
I think they're
rims.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. I think they're just, they're kind of offering it up both ways because they're like, okay, I don't really know where it's going to stick. So like I said, they come in 35, 40 and 45 millimeter widths.
Okay.
They've got them in 27.5 and 29 inch diameters. Price ranges from just under $100 to up to about 115. So once again, very reasonable.
Tubeless.
Yeah. Tubeless ready. The weights, like for your 29 plus, on 35 mil is like 580 grams, which isn't too bad. For reference, the 35 mil WTB is 612. So it's a little bit heavier for the WTB than the Arc. Yeah. So, you know, you are getting a little less weight for the money.
Yep.
Kind of to give you perspective, you know, like a carbon option would weigh about 440 grams. So, you know, when you're looking at that, you're giving up, you know, around 100 grams a rim, just ballparking it.
You're giving up probably 50 or 60 bucks.
At least. Yeah. At least. Yeah. So, you know,
the buck a gram.
Yeah. You know, that is definitely a noteworthy difference. But at the same time, you know, now we're talking about a half pound difference between an aluminum wheel set and a carbon wheel set. Whereas in that first gen of plus rims,
right,
like I was talking about, there we were talking a pound and a half difference. So this is a really, really, really significant, you know, improvement for bang for your buck.
Right. And for our Dutch friend, that would definitely be a good argument for him.
So the Easton Arc Plus, that's a really promising looking rim.
You know what's good about the DT ones that you're gonna talk about?
What's that?
Special nipples.
Yes. It's always nice when you get special nipples.
I want to hear about the special nipples on these.
I don't remember exactly what it is. I couldn't find a lot of information on these.
Do they point up or, I mean, are they?
Well, they've got.
When it gets cold, do they get a little stronger or?
Washers, man. Yeah. It's all about the washers.
Band-Aids on them or something.
Yeah, so all I remember reading in the product description was that they come with these special aluminum nipples and nipple washers.
Oh God. And that's all you can remember. Okay. So I'm going to have to delve into this.
Yeah. So it's a little bit more expensive option. Those rims are going for around $125 a rim.
Well, and you're limited on your width too.
Well, they offer them in two different versions. They offer them in a 30 mil width and they offer them in a 40 mil width. And the 30 mil width, like the 29 plus setup, 525 grams. That's really damn light.
Yeah.
You know, that's less than 100 grams heavier than carbon. You know, so it's very, very, very competitive. So, you know, like I said, you know, they've got two different versions of it. You know, you can kind of pick your flavor. If you want to go for wider, you can go wider. Even the 40 mils are still less than 600 grams. So that's another really, really awesome option. Unfortunately, with the 40 mil width, it's only available in the 27 plus. It's not available in the 29 plus also. So another rim that I really don't know a whole lot about.
Following up with the nipples.
Yep. So now we move on to spanking. Yes. There's the Spank Uzi. Yes. So.
Stop. Why would they do this to us? Oh, my gosh.
And guess what? It comes in colors.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
So we got lots of colors.
Excellent. Like a pink Spank Uzi, please.
I think, once again, this is a rim that is marketed more at your traditional mountain bike tire. It only comes in a 30.5 width. I couldn't get a 29-inch weight, okay. But the 27.5-inch weight, 480 grams.
Holy cow.
That's damn light.
Yeah.
So this is interesting. I'll be curious to find out what, you know, when these really hit the wild, because these are not available yet. They're back ordered, but you know, your shop can see it in QBP, which is like a predominant distributor. So, and once again, the price is good. 90
yeah.
bucks.
Yeah.
So that's a pretty cool option. Right. There's the Hugo that's been around for a while. That's another kind of one of those first gen ones. It's a little on the hefty side, a little on the pricey side.
Pete, holy cow.
Yeah. But Stans now just ended up releasing an update to the Flow, the Arch, and the Crest,
yeah.
which many people are familiar with from more traditional width mountain bike sizes.
Oh, gosh, yes.
And the Flow has a 29 millimeter internal width. And that one for the 27 version is 480 grams. The 29 version is 527 grams, which is darn light for a wide rim. And they cost $100. So, and I think I'm not sure if they're available right now, but they're going to be available very, 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 very soon.
Wow, $100?
Yeah. So that is another like super, super, super awesome rim.
Yeah, no doubt.
You know, I'm just hoping that it ends up being as durable as they say it's going to yeah. be.
You're not a weight weenie, are you?
Oh, not at all. Yeah.
Gosh, sounds like he's grand. Oh my gosh. Anyway.
So, you know, there's a few other traditional options that I put on here. There's, you know, the Sunwrangle Mule Fit, and then there's the Velocity Dually, which I put on there. You know, there's a lot of information out there. You've probably heard us talk about those before. Yeah. Those are not new rims, but you can kind of compare price-wise, weight-wise, and width-wise, and you know, kind of get a clue for how these new rims stack up.
The proliferation of Plus,
yeah,
across mountain biking genres.
It's huge.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
I mean, it's what we're finally seeing is this is kind of like what's happened with the fat bike world, where there was really limited tires, there was really limited rim options,
right.
And the market's finally caught up.
And then 12 people show up for the fat bike ride, each have a different tire.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And that happens a couple of years down the road.
Right.
Same thing's happening in the Plus bike world. We're finally starting to see a proliferation of options.
Right, right. So get yourself a goddamn Plus bike.
Or get yourself a goddamn Plus wheel set for your fat bike.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, this is fatbike.com.
That's yeah. Right. And, you know, I mean, it's great to ride your fat bike year-round. Mm-hmm. However, it's pretty darn awesome how versatile the fat bike can be. Yeah, when you go with the baby fat setup.
Right.
So we're going to stop.
Let's chill.
And then we're going to talk really briefly about a couple things that get me really excited.
Yeah, so go back to the store and get some milk. And then by the time you get your milk and you're on your way home, you can hear this last segment. I'm struck and I'm so in love. Oh, Carolina. Yeah, would you give me a kiss? Would you give me a kiss?
We're back, campers.
Yes, we are.
So, we've got one last little segment to talk about. I know we're getting a bit long-winded tonight. And this is just new stuff that came out through Sea Otter that I was really excited by.
Like hot off the presses.
Yes. So, one thing that's really noteworthy is that we've got a new Farley out there, new Trek Farley. It's
nice.
The Farley EX.
Okay.
It's 120 mil fat bike. So this thing...
Full suspension?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Nice yawn, Andy.
So this, what they're basically marketing with is the 27.5 by 4-inch tires.
Okay.
Which would... Now,
oh boy,
they call it a 4-inch tire. It's not even close to a 4-inch tire.
What is it?
If I remember correctly, on an 80 mil rim, I think it's 3.6.
Oh wow, that is
it's
not
puny.
Even close. Okay,
it's kind of like a plus tire.
Oh geez, now we're cutting hairs, splitting hairs.
Well, it's kind of bullshit that they called it a 4-inch tire.
Yeah, okay.
So, but that doesn't make it not awesome,
right?
Because for summer riding, you know, having a bike with this amount of travel and having that wheel set would be awesome.
This would be hot for a lot of people, man.
Yeah. This is a really cool bike.
Yeah.
So, One of the interesting things that I thought that came out in a lot of these articles were that, you know, they were, Trek was getting questioned about, okay, you know, it looks like fat bikes are tailing off and blah, blah, blah. And they were like, no, you know, our market's still expanding. And if you look at where it's growing the most,
yeah,
it's growing basically in that whole kind of belt of the East, Mideast, like Tennessee, Georgia,
okay,
you know, like Kentucky, that whole area. So what's happened is, you know, the Midwest and everything, you know, the northern end, I mean, we basically have been all for fat bikes.
Right.
But now it's starting to go south.
Oh, because of what their winters are like.
Well, and that's the thing. They didn't see the applicability of a fat bike.
Right.
But this bike, I mean, I think about, like, you know, Pisgah, this bike would kick ass down there. I'm not saying it's necessarily better than a Plus bike. I'm not saying it's necessarily better than a 29 bike.
No, but it's for those locations in the United States where there's like, it's kind of winter, but not really at all. But you need something a little bit wider, but not really, but kind of.
Well, but I think about this 27, you know, 0.5
yeah.
by quote unquote 4-inch tire.
Okay.
That's actually like 3.5 inches.
Yeah.
That thing would give you so much confidence
yeah.
with 120 mils of travel. It's yeah. like you could just bomb through stuff with this. This is going to be a bike that a lot of people absolutely love. So that's really exciting.
Yeah,
and,
that's cool.
You know, I mean, kind of to give perspective, like I said, I've kind of had this hard on for a full suspension bike for a while now.
Yeah.
And if this bike had been available 2 months ago, I would have bought it in a heartbeat.
Huh.
So, you know, that kind of gives you an idea, because this is exactly what I would have wanted to end up riding down, you know, in Pisgah. Cause,
full suspension, 120, 27.5 by 3.5.
Well, what I would have done was I would have tried to just buy the frame.
All right.
I would have built up a 29 plus wheel set for it. So I would, and this thing will fit 29 plus, no problem.
All right.
So I would have built up a 29 plus setup. So I would have had my 120 out back. I'd put, I don't know what necessarily would have been available on the front, but
something.
It wouldn't be a Bluto. Ideally, it'd be a Pike
okay.
Or something similar.
Yeah.
And, you know, put 29 plus up front, like maybe 140 travel, and this thing would just rock.
Yeah.
That is a really, really cool bike.
Yeah, move the fuck out because he's coming through.
Yeah, yeah. That thing would just be so baller. If I remember correctly, and this is going off of memory, please don't quote me on this. I think they're going to end up having a carbon and an aluminum version. So
okay.
There's going to be a variety of different
nice.
Budget options.
That's
I think,
good.
I want to say it's an aluminum rear triangle on both, but carbon front on the higher end. But it's a pretty cool bike.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm really stoked to see another full suspension fat bike option, and not just another 100 mil travel. And I'm not disparaging the Bucksaw. I think the Bucksaw is an awesome bike. But to go 120, I think that really kind of fills a vacuum that's been, you know, in the market.
Bucksaw is great for like 70 mile and a 70 mile bike path rides.
Inside joke. Sorry guys.
Okay.
All other right. things that get me stoked.
Yeah.
Vittoria.
Yeah.
They just released the Cannoli.
Yeah.
So
go with the Bombolini.
Yes, the Bombolini.
Right.
And I can pronounce it correctly now.
Exactly.
This one's
a little bit different.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't really know. I don't have any kind of inside information. I'm hoping we'll be able to get a little bit more info on this.
We can talk to Ken again.
Yeah. It's supposedly kind of a paddle tread is how it was described in the reviews that I heard. So I don't know if that's Vittoria's line or not, but that's kind of how it was written up.
God, they're making it in a whole bunch of different sizes.
Yeah, they got it. You know, for you fat bikers out there, 26 by 4.8. So, the Bombolini was a really good 4-inch tire.
Yeah.
And then also in the Plus world, it was a really good Plus tire. But they didn't have a really big, beefy tire. We've now got a Vittoria tire that's really big and beefy.
Yeah, I'm wondering if what this is going to ride, how this is going to look next to Bud and Lou.
Yeah, so, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out. But like I said, they described it as a paddle tread because it's meant for loose snow and sand.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I looked at it and it looked like a nice, fast rolling setup.
Oh, okay.
So it didn't necessarily look like, you know, a quote unquote paddle. It just
paddle tread,
it looked
okay.
fast.
Okay.
It looked really nice. So That's pretty cool.
Well, sometimes when you paddle, you move along pretty quickly.
Not a lot of info, but it's got a lot of promise.
Okay.
And Vitória's been doing some really cool stuff. I'm not going to geek out too much on their road tires and stuff like that on this podcast. They've been doing some really cool stuff with tread compounds, with this graphene stuff. This is kind of similar to what Continental did with their black chili compound, and they came out with some of the lowest rolling resistance road tires around. So, you know, Vitória's kind of done a very similar tact, but they've kind of done their own thing. I don't know the specifics of the technology beyond that, but their claims are really, really, really positive. They have a long history of making some just incredibly good tires. Especially like the cotton casing ones on the road and stuff.
But
like
you're not going to get into that.
No. I'm going to try not to. But Vitória is one of those companies that they've kind of blended the old school and the new school,
okay,
and have got some really cool tech out there. So, nice. Just thinking about things and doing things a little bit differently. They've also released a new Plus wheel set that's going to be available for both, you know, 27.5 and 29 inch diameters. It's got a 40 mil internal width, aluminum rim, boost spacing. It's like 1900 grams. Should be available this fall, but we don't know a lot more detail. So it's just, you know, it's a good stock wheel set. There's a few other options that are similar to that.
Something new out there.
It's cool.
Yeah.
The Maxxis tires, this is kind of shifting gears again, but
okay.
I ended up, you ended up riding on the framed. You ended up riding a pair of the 4.8 inch Maxxis Minion FBR FBF tires.
Yeah.
You know, solid set of tires. It is. Nice.
Yeah. Read the review of fatbike.com.
Yeah. I ended up snagging those from you and riding those for a little bit. Yeah. Also, I ended up having a prototype pair that I rode some. You know, real decent tire.
Heck yeah.
They're supposedly offering them in 4-inch variety also. Mm. And now we just found out they're going to be offering them in the 29 plus variety.
Ooh.
Now
let's go back to Pisgah.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was just going to say.
Dang.
So this ties in with that whole Pike thing. All of a sudden we've got a 29 plus burly ass tire.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've got yet another option. So you're not just looking at the Dirt Wizard if you want to end up having your Narnar tire.
Right, right.
You've got, you know, the Maxxis Minions, which are like a long heritage of being a really good tire for that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So that I was, once again, another kind of thing pointing in the direction that something big's coming down the pipe.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a really cool tire, and they've offered several other tires in plus sizes. They've got the Icon. I don't know if it's the Recon.
Yeah, it's called the Recon.
Okay. Yeah. High Roller 2. You know, a lot of those are only in 27 plus, but they offer them both 2.8 and 3-inch width.
Yeah.
So there's starting to be some really good options that way.
Nice.
Good
signs.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I'm getting really excited about some of the offerings. You know, SRAM Eagle, that gets me excited.
Oh,
I think that's it's a huge boon for fat bikers.
I can't wait.
Because that gives you a monster bailout. I mean, two buys be damned.
I swear in 5 years I'm going to be 12-speed.
Yeah, you are kind of a stick in the mud when it comes to that type of technology.
They still make 8-speed stuff. I was just checking it out.
Yep, and it's just as good as it was back in 1998.
It was great, but this 12-speed, I'm telling you.
No, this does look pretty darn cool to me. And I don't want to throw all the love towards SRAM.
They're not making new. They're no longer making new derailleurs.
Front derailleurs. Yeah. And when you've got a cassette like that goes 10 to 50, I mean it's a 500% range.
Yeah,
that is the same range basically as a 2x setup.
I'm gonna put a 52 on the front. maybe even bigger.
There you go. Yep.
12-speed.
Awesome. It is pretty awesome.
10x50.
So, you know, I got to admit, I'm pretty stoked about that. But I'm also pretty darn stoked about, you know, Shimano's Di2 XT offering.
Holy cow.
And
I had this discussion the other night.
Yeah. And so, you know, they've had the Di2 XTR
right,
that has gotten rave reviews.
Which you got to finance along with your RS1.
Yeah, exactly. It's super pricey. But they've done some really neat stuff. And, I mean, people aren't familiar with it. Their synchro shift option is... It sounds to me like a horrible idea on the surface, but everything I've heard sounds amazing, and I've ridden it, and it worked amazing. But what they do is they make it so you can control both the front and the rear from one shifter. And what you do is you basically go, okay, I want an easier or I want a harder gear. And you can program it so it shifts the front chainrings automatically to basically step this thing up in a logical progression.
Gotcha.
So in other words, like there's overlap between your chainrings.
Right.
So, you know, if let's say you're in your big chainring and you're going up to bigger cogs in the rear, there's a certain point where what you can do is you can shift to a smaller cog in the rear and shift to your smaller chainring.
Sure.
And it makes more sense to be in that gear.
Right.
So it automatically handles all that stuff for you. And you can basically shift and not even think about how much pressure you're putting on the pedals. You can be under full power going uphill and it'll shift the front chainrings no problem. It's all smooth, silent, seamless.
I think it's bullshit.
It sounds like bullshit. I mean, you know, after riding front derailleurs that sucked for so many years, It sounds like bullshit. But I got to admit, when I was like screwing around on a bike at an undisclosed location with XTR and the synchro shift, that thing was amazing. I tried to break it and I couldn't.
Oh, wow.
And it just worked. It was pretty incredible.
Gotcha.
Now, that's all cool. And I'm glad that, you know, it's a more reasonable price point. I think you can get something like $700-$800 you can get, you know, XTR DI2.
XT,
thank you. XT DI2.
Right.
XTR is like crazy expensive comparatively. Right. But the other thing in my newfound love of front and rear suspension, the other thing that I like is that they've made it so that Fox suspension has got like an electronic kind of module to be able to control it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the guys we were riding with when we were down in Pisgah. What they did is they had, I'm blanking on the name of what Scott calls it or what Fox calls it, but it's one remote and it controls both your fork and your rear shock.
Uh-huh.
And it's got three positions. So you've got your wide open. So like the one dude had 130 mils of travel. He's 130
squishy,
mils.
Squishy, front and back.
Front and back. And then he's got sort of an intermediate position where it drops down something like 90 mils of travel in the rear. And then it kind of like starts to lock out the front. And then he's got the third position, which is like pretty much full lockout front and rear.
Yeah.
And that is all cable actuated. And it works, but it's chunky. You got all these cables going all over the place.
They got a lot of cables going on.
Yeah, I'm not trying to rip on Scott. I think Scott is doing some really cool stuff with this, but I mean, both of those dudes were playing around with the barrel adjusters on their, you know, lockout thing because there's at some point in time, you know, every couple of days that, you know, they'd throw the thing and it wouldn't lock out one or the other shock and blah, 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 blah. So it's a very cool concept, but in reality, there's some negatives to it.
Yeah.
Whereas with the electronic, you lose a lot of those negatives. And what Shimano's doing is they're making it so it's integrated. So like you can end up using their shifters to control your shocks.
Ooh.
So in other words, like let's say you're running a one by setup.
Yeah.
You know, your right shifter handles all of your shifting.
Yeah.
But then you could have a left shifter and that would end up handling your fork or your front and rear suspension.
Right, right.
You know, and you can basically do your lockout, you can do an intermediate position, you can do whatever.
Yeah.
Or if you're doing the synchro shift thing where one shifter does it all as far as both the front derailleur and the rear derailleur, you've got, once again, your right shifter can control it all and the left shifter can do your suspension.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, there's a million other ways you can program this.
Yeah.
I mean, you can make it so that, like, you know, the one paddle on each side, you know, controls upshifts, you know, and then the secondary paddle controls your suspension whatever.
If you tap your nuts on the left-hand side of the saddle, your dropper post will go down. If you tap your nuts on the right-hand side of the saddle, your dropper post comes back up.
Yep.
Hell yeah, man.
And if you program it right, you even get a shock.
Yeah. Right into the tank. Thank you very much.
Jeez, yep. So, you know, there's some really cool stuff, some very geeky stuff, but very cool stuff that's going on DI2. And, you know, They've really made some big improvements. And, you know, this is, instead of it being the type of thing where you got to plug it into some Windows computer at your shop and you have to have a special software to program
and
stuff.
Do it on your phone.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's all like Bluetooth and Ant Plus compatible. So You can do it from your smartphone, and they got an app for it. And so there's just some really neat developments that way. And, you know, I got to admit, I'm not a big fan of electronic shifting. Not because I'm against electronic shifting, but it's just the SRAM stuff I've been riding is so good that mm-hmm. I'm like, why do I need it?
Yeah, but you're going to have to switch over now.
Yeah, this has gotten me thinking, that XT is looking mighty fine.
Back to Shimano.
Yep. Yeah, I haven't ridden it in years, but it's got me thinking. So, you know, really just neat stuff happening on a lot of different fronts.
So the title of the podcast was Forks O'Plenty. I think we should change it to like Plus O'Plenty.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's really what it is. This Plus stuff has finally matured. We've got so many good options.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the thing we haven't even really talked about is there's so damn many, like, 29er/27 plus bikes that have been released.
Right.
You know, there's just a slew of them. And it's so nice because there's so many good options.
That's the May podcast.
We could. I mean, the thing is though, it's like we would go, okay, here's another one. 120 mils of travel, 130 front,
right.
And it's got new school trail geometry. Next. This one's got 120 in the rear.
Okay.
It's got 120 in the front. It's got new school trail geometry.
Check.
Next one. And I'm not trying to disparage these companies, but it's like there's a lot of cookie cutter bikes that are out there that are available. And that's great because you might have a shop that only sells brands X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
And X is offering a kick butt plus model.
Mm-hmm.
So you can deal with your favorite shop and you can get the bike you want, you know, and there's a lot of good options.
They're just dumbing down the shore. Take it back to the beginning, man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Jeez, okay.
Yeah, because we're dumbing down trails left and right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, making it easier.
That's what this whole Plus thing is. You know, like real riders, they want to ride skinny-ass tires. Me, I only ride cyclocross bikes.
Right.
Because that's what a real man does.
Right.
Yeah.
Well,
so,
hey, that was a podcast, and we appreciate you listening to us. Put some comments down at the bottom if you want to talk to us. But as always, keep riding your bikes, keep the campfire lit, and we'll talk to you next month.
Cheers. Oh, Carolina.
Yeah. Won't you give me a kiss? Won't you give me a kiss? Oh, Carolina.
Thanks for listening. The music we use on today's show is Toots Hibbert singing Oh Carolina from the Free Music Archive. You can find all our shows at fatbike.com, including notes for today. And those notes include some nifty tables that hopefully will help you interpret all the numbers and other gobbledygook we talked about.
Would you give me a kiss?
That's what they're doing.